And here we go. Welcome back to Snakes, Rats, and Goats, talking about Survivor Season 40, episode, what is this, 5, 4? Who cares? I'm your co-host, Ryan Elder, and with me, as always, is...
Your co-host, Scott Chernoff. Somebody who cares. Somebody who cares about which episode it is.
And so what episode is it, Scott?
I believe it's number four. But
okay, great.
Two people got voted off in episode one.
Oh, that's why I was confused.
So, yep. Yes,
that's why I was confused.
So well, so complex. Hey, what's
fun
up?
Episode. Let's
we got
get right into it. Let's get our guest here. Yeah, let's get our guest in.
All right. He's a gentleman and a scholar. You just heard him. That proves his scholarliness. He is an Emmy-nominated television writer, producer. His credits go back to According to Jim. And if you've ever seen shows on television, there's a good chance you've written for them.
I have seen shows on television.
Yeah, I've written for a few of them.
We worked together on the School of Rock television show, where that's where you got a couple of your nominations, I believe.
Yeah, as did you. And, you know, whenever someone says Emmy nominated, you never have to ask, oh, did you win?
Right.
Because if you had won, they would have said Emmy winning.
Wouldn't it be great if somebody was humble enough?
No one has ever been, oh, I won, but just say I was nominated.
Yeah, Meryl Streep, just say I'm Oscar nominated. I've got more nominations than wins.
So it's about at this time, Scott, where the listener is going, okay, so what's his name?
Oh.
I didn't say his name?
Not yet.
Harry Hannigan.
My name is Harry Hannigan.
Thanks for being here, Harry.
Thank you for
what
keeping
a professional.
An eye on who's been named so far and who hasn't.
Yes. So, Harry, we got to ask before we get started, how much Survivor have you seen?
I have seen exactly one episode of Survivor. It was the one I watched last night.
Fantastic. Well, this ought to be fun then.
Yeah.
This is so exciting because we haven't had somebody who's never seen any in a while.
It seems to be some sort of cross between torture porn and game show.
Yes, that's a great way to describe it, I think.
Yeah.
Well, last night's was especially torture porny.
Yes, it was.
I mean, yeah, go ahead, Harry.
I was just going to say it was much more political than I thought. I thought it was mostly the, throw this rope over the fork and climb up the thing and put the puzzle together. That's what they did at the end. I thought it was the whole show was that. But there was a lot more, who should we fuck over? Let's fuck her over. No, let's fuck him over.
Yeah. And now you understand the draw, right? That's why people have been tuning in for 40 seasons. You know, parlor games on a beach are fun, but it's really the backstabbing that makes it truly great.
The show, the heart of the show, Harry, is the strategy of who you're going to vote off and how you're going to pull it off and how you're going to avoid being the one who's voted off.
So my first question.
Yes.
Because like within 5 minutes, I already knew who my villain was.
Okay.
Which was Boston Rob.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Because, everyone was saying, he's a real alpha male, which immediately I'm like, oh, screw that guy. Second, there are, on the list of most hateable people, there are, number one, Nazis.
Right.
Number two, Boston sports fans.
Can't argue with that.
Number three, Southern sheriffs, but they only got passed by Boston sports fans recently.
Right.
So Boston Rob was like immediately like, screw that guy.
Yeah.
Had you ever heard of Boston Rob before?
No. Okay. I took an immediate dislike of him. And
that's
amazing. Maybe you can help me understand, why don't they just vote him off? Because no one seems to like him. Does he have some sort of powerful mojo or something?
This has been a big topic this season.
You are tapping right into basically the number one topic we've had in every episode this season is, why haven't they voted Boston Rob out? Last night they didn't get a chance to, but... Yeah,
right, last night they
his crew, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So they've taken out people close to Boston Rob.
Mm-hmm. Like his wife, for example.
His wife is there.
Is his wife Parvati?
No.
No, she's still in the game. His wife is on Extinction Island.
Oh, I see.
Her name is Amber.
Okay.
And, but, so yes, there's been a lot of talk of weakening Boston Rob via voting out people close to him who are might be allied with him. Allied. And yet they haven't pulled the trigger on Boston Rob. Now, the one, he does have some mojo. I mean, he is fairly good at sort of manipulating people and talking to them and turning situations in his favor. But I think a bigger reason this season is that people are trying to keep in. They sort of talked about this on the other tribe that did go to tribal council, trying to keep in the bigger threats as a shield against you. Like if there are people who say, well, if he gets voted off, then I'm the next biggest threat.
I see.
Yeah.
I'm not saying it's the right course of action. I'm not certain what is.
It's like the season of Sopranos where Tony let Uncle June be like the center of the FBI's, you know, wall.
Because if they're looking at him, they're not looking at
Tony.
Exactly.
Smart. Yeah, and you know, comparing Boston Rob to a mob boss, this would not be the first time. In fact, it's probably the 1,000,000th time. Mm-hmm. He definitely has that sort of godfather mentality. I mean, you saw the way he was talking to Michelle when they're playing that game with the, which again, by the way, this game with the circle on a string, where he's just like idly throwing it. He always seems to get it at the end of the scene. Like they love to edit him playing the game in a conversation, playing. And then at the end of the scene, he gets it. And nobody else has ever landed it this entire season. Right. So there's some sort of one thing you should know, Harry, before we go too much further, because Scott and I love to get into this, is that the game itself has already fully been played and the show runners know who wins.
I see. So when they edit it.
Yes, they're telling us a story about why this person wins,
or why that somebody didn't win. It's usually one or the other.
Yeah. So this episode was edited to show us why Tyson got voted out, but they keep coming back to Rob.
Guy voted out.
Ethan was voted out last week.
Oh, did I watch last week?
Oh, maybe you did.
Uh-oh.
All right, so Harry's going to go watch the episode. We'll be right back, and we're back. Harry, so now you watched the correct episode.
Now I get it. Now I understand the show.
So now we were so excited to have somebody who'd never seen a single episode of Survivor. Now you've seen two.
Yes. I'm an old pro.
Okay.
Basically your favorite show at this point.
Yeah.
So what we were talking about before that was that the show likes to tell us a story, right? And so this episode was the story of why Tyson was voted out. Sorry for the spoiler on that first time.
It's all right.
But
when I was watching the physical challenge, I was like, there's no way to call loses this. They were so far ahead in that swimming thing.
I know. Wasn't that exciting? That kind of a ridiculously large comeback rarely happens.
Yeah.
To the point where I'm sort of wondering, and maybe you are too, Scott, was Nick throwing the challenge? It almost seemed like it.
I've heard some speculation about that, but why would he do that?
Because then he became the target, right? It doesn't seem to make any sense, but.
I mean, why would they be, you know, why would he alone be trying to throw the challenge?
Well, he was best positioned in that alliance of four that we know about to throw the challenge, because wasn't he doing the puzzle with Sarah?
Yeah, but what would be the reason?
To vote out Tyson.
To call had won like every one, right? Yeah. Like the last five or something?
They had won all but once.
So
yeah.
They had Amber, two people like sitting out.
Yeah, exactly. They were two ahead.
Exactly two episodes, and Sandra sat out both.
Yep. Yeah. And let's change topics, because this is a contentious point on Twitter these days.
Sandra Ben.
They used to have a rule that you were not allowed to sit out the same person in back-to-back challenges. However, that was when we would have both a reward challenge and an immunity challenge in the same episode. Now they've combined them into one challenge. Mm. So it seems like they're kind of bending the rules a little bit.
I have heard that, yeah, they've changed the rules to be that you can't sit out two challenges like back to back in the same episode.
Right. Mm. Yeah. Which, okay, fine. Huge advantage to Sandra's tribe, right?
Yeah. Like,
yeah, so because she would be much more on the chopping block if she had to be in every challenge.
Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah, now she seems like someone that they should be targeting.
She did well with the puzzles, that one challenge she did recently.
And she did, the one I saw that was the wrong one I watched.
Yeah.
She should be pretty good at fishing, too.
Yeah,
yeah, and that's new.
Just put a net in the ocean and wait.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, one thing that you may not know about Sandra, Harry, is that she's actually won the game twice. She's the only two-time winner. So this, if she won this season, she'd be a three-time winner.
She said she was sitting on like $2 million or something.
Well, yeah, yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that's good.
She is. You know, normally, I'm sure you picked up on this, that most seasons it's all strangers playing, but this season it's all people who've previously won the game.
Yes, it's the winners at war.
Yes, they're at war.
Winners at war.
So I don't remember the challenge in the Ethan boot episode, but in this episode, so this is all sort of, the parts of this challenge were all parts we've seen before, right, Scott? Like, there was nothing sort of new about this challenge.
Can we talk about the jumping for the keys on the boys?
Let's definitely talk about that.
Because they seem to pick the shortest and least athletic three.
That was
Adam Arvati, who cannot jump at all and doesn't seem very tall. And William Defoe's sister, they only showed her doing one.
Yeah.
Wait, Willem Dafoe's sister? Is that Denise?
I guess so. She looks a lot like William Dafoe.
Like, yeah. That's hilarious.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was odd. I feel like they erred on the side of putting strong people to pull the boat. Yeah, yeah. Swimming
yes,
to pull
totally.
The boat. But like Jeremy is tall.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if there's anybody else tall on that.
Rob is tall. Rob is really tall.
And he's like he's got enough leaping ability that he could get his first try.
Yeah,
and
for some reason that tribe has been putting Rob on the puzzle every week.
Yeah, it seems Rob's saying, "Oh, I'll do the puzzle."
Yeah,
I guess it paid off this week though because he did a really good job.
He redeemed himself. The last couple of weeks Although I think that last week, the first one that you watched, Harry, like they almost won on the puzzle and they made up a big deficit in time. So I think Rob is good at puzzles, but he's also good at the physical stuff. So it didn't make a whole lot of sense. And no, I don't think there was anything new. I'm not an expert in that, but I think all the challenges this season are,
Callbacks
to past seasons.
Yeah, which is fun. It's definitely fun.
But yeah, why did they put the shortest? I mean, Parvati 10 years ago when she last played was, you know, a dynamo with the challenges. Yeah. But that was 10 years ago.
A lot can change in 10 years physically for someone, for sure. Especially especially if they've had babies, right?
I remember pictures of Scott with long hair.
You've seen them. It's true. A lot can change.
We have to put one of those on the podcast show page.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
Oh, and speaking of dynamos, I was very impressed with on Extinction Island with the trainer. What's her name?
Natalie. Oh, Scott's favorite.
She's one of my favorites.
She's a tiger.
She's awesome.
Amazing.
And I thought it was very nice of them to walk with Ethan on his last one.
We
all thought he was going to die on that island.
Yeah, this could be his last walk. Well, we were watching and my wife was like, "You've got to be kidding me. They're going up for a 21st time?" She was almost like angry at them.
So that makes me think it wasn't as hard as we were led to believe, right? Like, so say you get cast on a reality show and, you know, you're out there to make good TV and they give you this challenge. What are you going to be like? Oh, you can either be like, "Oh, this is easy," right? And then prove it. or not prove it and be embarrassed. But like the most interesting thing is for you to be like, oh my God, it was so hard, right? Like just play that up. I don't know. Call me cynical.
I don't know. I mean, it's supposed to be a pretty tough climb. I imagine by the eighth time or so, you might start to go insane.
Absolutely. And I think Ethan's problem was that he tried to go too fast too soon. It's like, this is an endurance challenge, you know? You want to slow...
Slow, steady. Somebody said that. One of the
Yeah, exactly. And like, you know, Amber and Danny, they didn't almost pass out. Yeah. You know, I think they just took it at a regular pace. They did get finished. And so did Ethan. Like, I think, you know, this was a fun segment, but it was just way too long for me.
It was so long. Mm-hmm. And it just brings up so many reasons why I do not like The Edge of Extinction.
Harry, do you know, like, from context, could you figure out what Edge of Extinction was?
No, it just seemed like when you lose, you go there, and I guess there's some way to get back onto one of the teams.
Okay, yeah, you figured it out. You figured it
they've
out.
Only, this is, they normally do not have the Edge of Extinction. They did it on a recent season. They brought it back this time.
It might be something they took from MasterChef or Top Chef.
Yes, a lot of shows have that sort of
like a comeback kitchen thing.
Yep.
Yeah, the loser's bracket sort
of. Normally, Survivor has been pretty opposed to that concept. They've done it only, what, three times before this? Two Redemption Islands.
Three Redemption Islands. And
three Redemption Islands and one Outcast tribe. So four times before that.
Out plus of 40.
So this is actually the sixth time they've done it out of 40 seasons where someone has gotten their way back in.
Yeah, different mechanisms, but... But it's, I'll tell you why. Number one, there's the reason we've talked about a billion times, which we don't have to go over, which is, you know, when you are voted out, it's final, it's over. And that's the drama. Mm-hmm. So having this Extinction Island completely undermines the drama. And we've talked about the game reason of now you're on there bonding with the potential jury, which was clearly illustrated by Ethan, but also, like, here's something. If it's, like, isn't suffering and starving on an island, like, isn't that just what Survivor is supposed to be?
Yeah, right.
So now it's like you have Sophie going, we're looking over at Extinction Island. I don't want to go there. So it's undermining how difficult the actual
the game itself.
Game
yeah,
is.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And it took so much time away from the game.
Oh, my God.
It did this, I guess, this week, if that's... You guys seem to be reacting like it's incredibly long. It seemed not bad for me. I did like to see that there's medical personnel ready to swoop in and say, hey, crazy, slow it down.
That was reassuring.
You've got cancer. Why don't you slow everything down, buddy?
It was not a race.
Uh-huh.
It was not a race. It was a race
against the sun. You had to beat it by sundown.
That's true. But you didn't have to beat the other three.
No.
The best part, though, was the tag at the end of the show made it all worthwhile.
Oh, my God. Yes. No, you're absolutely right.
Did you stay in long enough to see the tag at the end when Tyson arrived at Extinction Island?
Oh, no, I didn't. I turned it off after he gave his thing to Nick, which surprised me. But what happened?
They just have 30 seconds of the person arriving on Extinction Island. And he gets there and they go, hey, it's Tyson. Oh, my gosh, Tyson. He goes, hey, huh, it's warm here. You guys have a lot of firewood.
That's great.
It was like one of the funniest moments I've ever seen on that
Tyson,
show.
Man. Tyson is, I think, the funniest, the most like truly funny person to ever play the game. There's been a lot of funny people to play the game. Most of them are unintentionally funny. Uh-huh. But for me, Tyson is the most intentionally funny person to ever play the game. I mean, did he
know about the challenge and everything?
Well, do you think he knew? I don't think he knew.
He knew. Come on. That they didn't show him finding out, but that's exactly the kind of thing he would say.
That's true. Maybe he said it like 10 minutes later after they told him.
Yeah, it's just like in the very first episode when the men are all on the beach and then the women pull up in their boat and half of the women are like falling in the ocean when they tried to get out of the boat. And he goes, hey ladies, did you get to hit the ocean yet? Like, like, you know, he's just sarcastic. Like,
right. But I liked it better the way they edited it to not let us see him.
Exactly.
Know
yeah. No, no,
a
totally.
Great moment where he shows up and he's like, wow, you guys got a lot of wood here. Really great.
That's pretty funny.
I mean, maybe not. Maybe he didn't know. It's funny either way. But yeah, the way they edited it was pretty great. Absolutely. Yeah, so let's talk about how he, I mean, we can jump around for sure, but sure. Let's talk about, because you mentioned it, how he gave his, he bequeathed his fire token to Nick, which was really funny. And he was like, you get a fire token from your idol, Nick.
Yeah.
Which was classic Tyson. He's such a troll.
So yeah, why that does seem very trolly. His best friend was Sandra, right? I was like, oh, well, he's going to give it to Sandra.
Well, he knows Sandra probably led the charge to vote.
Yeah,
him out.
He probably knows Sandra was against him.
And actually,
friend is Rob.
That's right, Rob. Yeah,
in terms of that cat,
in real life. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But they're on separate tribes.
The other thing is that Nick was probably the only person who didn't lie to him, because Nick was the target. Tyson probably didn't spend a lot of time talking to Nick, right?
Yeah.
That could be a reason. Yeah, I didn't.
So if everyone else was like, you're fine, we're voting Nick. And then he gets to the end and like, oh, because it did seem like he got a little blindsided when he was like, I should have known.
But he smelled it. He was like, this is pretty easy.
His plan was working too easily.
Yeah. And then the viewer was also like, that plan worked too easily.
Which plan? You mean the plan of
Tyson's
Tyson?
Plan? Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, it's always like every single episode, the first plan after the challenge is never the one that is the final plan, right?
Right.
Sometimes it is if they've cycled through 10 plans and they end up circling back to the original plan.
If there's enough smoke for the editors to you know, put out there for other plans, then yes. But generally, like, they like to tell it narratively as though that first plan was destined to fail.
And this was the mostly functional tribe. So when the other tribe has gone to tribal, we've seen a zillion plans.
Yeah, you saw when you watched the Ethan Boot episode, Adam is trying to vote out Parvati. Boston Rob wants to vote out Adam. Yeah.
You know what I was impressed with? I mean, that seemed much messier.
Yes.
Absolutely, yep.
One I shouldn't have watched.
That's okay. We all saw it, so we can talk about it.
The person I'm very impressed with is Yule. Yule seems to have
a
grasp of things. And
Yule is getting an amazing edit this season.
I was about to say that Yule seems to have that tribe on lockdown.
He's smart, absolutely. But he's also, there's a cheerfulness about him that's...
Absolutely. And, you know, one of the things that you didn't see, because it was literally two or three episodes ago, is the reason that Sandra doesn't trust Tyson and the reason that she was a bad swing vote for those people to pull over to vote out Nick instead is because Yule planted the seed that Tyson was trying to get out Sandra 2 weeks ago.
I mean, it was a seed of truth.
It was absolutely true, but like Yule planted that seed and it totally grew to fruition this episode in a way that worked perfectly for Yule.
Yeah, Tyson came to Yule and said, I think we should get out Sandra. She's the most dangerous. She's won twice. And Yule said, oh yeah, okay, that seems like a good idea. But then he told the camera, I don't trust Tyson. I don't trust him either. And I would rather keep Sandra.
Yeah, I got confused. Sandra's not the one I was thinking of. Who's the one he said, who's your favorite? She said, my favorite's Tyson.
Sarah.
That's Sarah.
Oh, yeah, Sarah.
I got that confused.
Didn't he leave Sarah?
That's what I thought.
Fired.
They just spent a whole segment showing us that him and Sarah got along really well.
Yeah, what was the reason? Why were they showing that to us?
Probably to show us, set us up. Well, so it's possible that it makes us believe that Sarah and Tony and Tyson are going to be successful in voting out Nick, right? Mm-hmm. And it explains why Sarah might want to keep Tyson and vote out Nick.
Right, okay.
But, you know, it does seem like Tyson, it seems like the ultimate payoff would have been he gives his token to Sarah, but that's not how Tyson rolls.
I will say that this is Sarah's now third time playing, and I believe that scene between her and Tyson was the first time I've ever seen her smile, and I'm including when she was when she won.
Wow.
I totally agree. This scene with her and Tyson was the most I have ever liked her by a long
time. Maybe that's why it's in there then.
Maybe there might be. They're trying to make us like her.
Is she human? Can we make her in any way likable? Oh, there we go. Okay.
She have one. Well, there was also the scene with her and Tony last week where they were blowing ash at each other.
Oh yeah, God, that was so funny.
You know, one thing that makes Tony a little dangerous is he sounds like a complete idiot.
Yes.
So you think, oh, I don't have to worry about Tony.
They think he's a clown.
Well, so, and Nick
screwed up the puzzle. Is it Nick or Tony?
Nick also sounds like a kind of an idiot.
Yeah. So you're saying
Tony sounds like an East Coast idiot, and Nick sounds like a Southern idiot.
Yeah, and you remember when Nick was like, was it Nick who was like, who said it? Before we played the game, I thought Tony was going to be a complete asshole.
That was Yule.
Oh, that was Yule. That's right. Yeah. Man, how did Yule get away with that? That's really funny.
Yeah, but I understand completely what he's talking about.
Totally. And we've had guests on who, you know, have watched Tony's because we podcasted both of Tony's previous seasons, right?
No.
Just
not his first, not his triumphant season.
Yeah, yeah. We podcasted his second season, and we've had guests that were like, I hate Tony, because they just are like biased against East Coast people or whatever, especially cops, because he's a cop.
Yeah.
But Tony is a lot of fun, and that's one reason why I think Scott and I love him as a player, because he's chaotic and he's funny and weird and does things you don't expect.
Yeah.
Well, when the season he won, he was hilarious, but he also every episode he had crazy plans.
And they were not good plans.
Sometimes they were.
He made some errors.
It just might work kind of plans.
Yeah. Yeah,
exactly.
Exactly.
Literally, exactly.
And they did. He won.
Yeah. I mean, he also made some horrible unforced errors, like top five, baby. Top five is like one of the biggest errors I can think of. But, you know, it didn't matter because there were a lot of goats that season, and he had his pick at the final three between two goats. Actually, a goat picked him to go to the end. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's right. He should not have won because a goat picked him instead of the even worse goat to go to the end with.
Do you want
to
tell
what is a goat?
Yeah. You want to tell Harry what a goat is?
Good call. A goat is someone who is easy to beat at the end of the game, someone who nobody likes.
You you lead them to the end.
Yeah. Right.
Then you beat them.
The backronym for goat is great opponent at tribal.
I see.
So this season it's really hard to find goats because they literally all won. Nobody is an idiot.
They're all goats in the sense of greatest of all time.
Exactly.
And even like Nick, who you said seems kind of dumb, that was part of his strategy when he won, was to play up the country bumpkin persona.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Seems to be working again. Like it really, it really helped him this episode
I think it did. Yeah.
Yeah. He doesn't seem like a threat, right? Like, he seems like, we can vote him out whenever we want.
He seems like, oh, let's bring him along as like a mascot.
Totally.
We could dress him in sweaters and stuff.
Yeah. Oh, my. What did you... Now, I just want to circle back because we've talked a bit about her already. What did you think about Sandra?
She seems... Obviously, she knows the game and how to play it. But her strategy seems very simple. It's like, you guys going to say my name? All right, then I'll say whatever you want me to say.
Yeah.
It's not my name.
Yeah, she's famous for that strategy, and many people have tried it since and failed. Uh-huh. I think it's because most people can't commit to that for an entire season. Yeah. They start to get ideas, you know.
And they get attached to people. She doesn't get attached to people.
She doesn't get attached to anyone. It's amazing. I don't know how she does it and still wins, right?
I mean, she likes. There's people she likes.
Yep, but she just does not care if they leave.
Yeah, I think she has a very strong sense of what $1 million can get you.
And that's,
it seems to put her past any kind of friendship or ally that would last beyond the show.
Yeah, well, you know, every single person in this game is a millionaire, so it's a battle of the millionaires.
So shed no tears for any of them.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, some of them sort of ended up there, but she, you know, she from her very first season, it was very much like if her ally was in trouble, She felt bad for them, but she wasn't going to risk her own game to save them.
Yep. And that has worked for her very well. And I think one of the reasons is because when you don't risk your game for your ally, the assumption amongst everyone else in the game is that now you've made that person your enemy. Mm-hmm. But because she doesn't lie to them, really, she doesn't butter them up before she cuts them or make it personal, they're fine voting for her to win at the end. I don't know if you know how the ending of the game works, because they don't really explain it. Once it gets down to three people, sometimes two, this season probably three, the rest of the, you know, there's a, everyone else who's been voted out votes for which of those three they think deserve to win.
Oh.
So you have to convince the jury to vote for you there. And one of the ways you do that is by not voting them out in such a way where they hate you forever after
that.
There have been people who have played just masterful strategic games, but then they get to the end and they were just such assholes that nobody wanted to vote for them.
Right.
But
so Boston Rob has a chance.
You could argue that Sandra's second win was that very situation where she was up against two people who were complete assholes to the jury. And as a result, she won.
But, you know, as you just pointed out about Boston Rob, like, he's actually been to the finals twice. The first time he lost to Amber, by the way, who he later married. But he,
so I guess that was amicable.
He won, yes. They were,
he got half anyways.
He proposed to her right before they read the final vote. So he was going to win either way. But he lost that season because he was too ruthless and hurt some people too badly for them to want to vote for him. The time that he did win later on, he modified that a bit, where he, I think he's gentler and less mean to people to their face.
Yeah.
Than he used to be.
Yeah, I mean, Rob, as much as, you know, he is pretty unlikable, especially at first, I didn't like him at first either. And I still don't love him as a character. But he is very, very good at Survivor. It's just no question about it.
Which is why they should have voted him out first.
Yeah, I know.
But instead,
I know.
They voted out Natalie, and then they went on to lose like 3-4 challenges, and after that, because they didn't have Natalie.
Yeah, Natalie seems like she would be incredibly useful.
Absolutely,
yeah, it's insane.
I'm glad you answered that, because I was trying to figure out why she was over on Extinction Island, because she's clearly,
she was the first person voted out that season, and it was basically because there's a guy on that same tribe that Boston Rob is on named Jeremy. Mm-hmm. And they were seen. Oh, my phone is ringing. Ignore that.
Every single episode of the podcast.
I don't know how to turn that ringer off.
Your home phone, which you claim never rings well, during our podcast every time.
It rings with only spam.
Telemarketers. Yeah.
Okay. We'll put them on the line.
No, we were going. We've done that, Harry.
Yes.
We've done that before, but I won't do it today. But usually it sounds like a recording, but I ask the phone company, and I know our listeners want to hear about this because I get it bundled with the cable. Can we just, we don't need it. We don't use it. Let's cut it. And they said it will raise your bill.
Yes.
Yep. Well, just unplug the damn phone then.
All right, Ryan.
I just never plugged one in. I mean, I have a line.
Exactly. Same.
Okay. Well, I have
put a tangent here, but,
I have
a solution for the problem.
That is a wonderful solution, but neither of you have children, and I worry about an emergency, and I don't have cell service.
All right.
Okay, fair enough.
Gotcha. Okay, so.
Yeah, you played the kid, you played the kid card.
Yeah, sorry about that, but I have no idea what I was talking about when the phone started.
That's okay. I want to talk about
Natalie. Basically, she and Jeremy were seen as a very strong pair because they have become, since their original season, they became very close. They're like a brother and sister. And so she was targeted because nobody wants a pair. It's like two votes versus your one.
Yeah.
Right. So I assumed like everybody sort of, you know, hooked up with 3-4 people at the beginning. It's like,
yeah, Usually
that does happen. That does happen, but the bonds that are made outside. Go ahead, Scott.
Oh, well, that's a good point. Sorry. Well, I was just going to say the first person voted off is usually a bit of like a spin of the roulette wheel, but because there's not much to base it off. But as Ryan was saying, this season, they all know about the bonds that people already have coming in.
Okay. So everyone's sort of a known quantity. It's not like a complete cipher.
And that's why Tyson was making the pitch that, hey, there's four people who are not connected. When they talked about people having connections, it was just about their connections to each other.
Which, by the way, was a winning strategy for him when the season he won was he was arguing, you know, it was a complicated blood versus water season. So everybody was playing with one person they knew that was their loved one or related to them, most likely. So he made the case like, oh, we need to vote out all the people that are connected that season, and it won him the game. So he, you know, this is a great case of someone like being forced into the same strategy and not having it work again.
Interesting.
So, yeah, but it was his only angle, I think.
But wasn't he arguing now? He was telling Tony and was it Sarah? Like, we need to, or Tony and Sandra, we need to, the people who are connected need to bond together to vote out the people who aren't.
Correct, right. It was like the opposite angle.
It was the opposite.
Same concept, yeah.
They'll do what I did and win.
Right, exactly.
And which is actually what they're doing.
Yep.
Yes.
And it seems like, by the way.
But are they secretly connected? Like, does he not know that Yule and those four are together?
They do. It does not seem that he knows that.
Except for he calls them out. He literally just names all four of them, except for he can't name Sophie. He forgets her name.
That was hilarious.
But he, like, lists them as, like, and basically lists them as an alliance.
That was a great line. So under the radar.
It was amazing, yeah.
Yeah.
He doesn't know that they're specifically working together, but he basically could tell based on tribe dynamics that they're incentivized to work together, which is why I think he's one of the better players to play. He just found himself in a really bad position. You know, if there had been some kind of a swap, he could have gone much, much further.
Mm-hmm. And there will be a swap next time, and somebody's going to get screwed.
What's a swap? Yeah.
That's when they shuffle up the tribes.
Ah.
How do we know it's next time?
Are they going to shuffle in anyone from Extinction?
Don't know when that'll happen. The one time they did it, they brought somebody in. About halfway through the season, they have the merge, which is where they merge the tribes into one. And the challenges become individual. Mm-hmm. So you win immunity as an individual as opposed to your tribe, or reward as an individual. And so last time they did this, they had one person come back in at the merge and another person come back in toward the end of the game. I don't know what they'll do this time.
Yeah.
There was a drop your buffs.
Okay. So that's right. Do you think it'll be three tribes of five or two tribes of seven with someone going to Exile Island or something?
I don't think they're going to do an Exile Island when they have Extinction Island.
Right, that seems like a hat on a hat.
Probably three five-person tribes, but they could do 7-7 and exile somebody. I don't know.
They've three five-person tribes is brutal.
It would be nice if somebody, if the Extinction Tribe somehow won. I don't know if that's a possible thing, but...
Oh, wait a second.
They're voting the smart people over there.
So you know
what? Natalie and Tyson and, you know, some of the heat...
I could see that them doing that, Scott, is where the Extinction Tribe becomes a fourth tribe for just one challenge.
That's what they did with the Outcast Tribe.
Right. But this wouldn't be a way to buy their way back in. It would just be a way to spice it up.
Like a challenge. That'd be fun.
Yeah. It would be fun and a nice way to like have the Edge of Extinction interact with the game itself.
But then it's not the Edge of Extinction. I mean... They've already added all these games to Edge of Extinction. The first time they did it, Harry, it was just you sit here and suffer for for a month and
29 days. Yeah.
Yeah. And maybe you'll get back in. And now they've got all sorts of things to do. They got to climb the mountain 20 times.
I know. That's
they have one thing to do once every 3 days. It's not that exciting.
But just strategy wise, it seems like, you wouldn't want to send you know, your smartest, toughest people over to Extinction Island if you knew that they were going to come back at you.
It's like, true.
It's like you're sending your strongest enemies, now go get stronger over there and then come back at me.
Well, that could be another reason to not send Boston.
They also, the people playing the game don't know how many opportunities the people on Edge of Extinction are getting to earn those tokens either.
Like, yeah, they don't know even that. Know unless they've been, yeah, there's a couple people who have been the beneficiary, like if somebody wins an advantage on Edge of Extinction, but unless they've received something from over there, they don't know what's going on there.
Yeah, you know what they're probably thinking to themselves is, I'm still in the game. There's been literally zero ways to get more fire tokens from inside the game. They must be handing them out like candy over at Edge of Extinction, right? Like, that's the only assumption you can make, is that they're not handing them out in the game itself. They must be doing it at Edge of Extinction.
These fire tokens are new also, Harry. We've never seen
this. What do you do with them? Are they just like currency or what?
Yes.
Basically, yeah. You can use them to buy advantage. Like, so you saw in the Ethan Boot episode that Natalie wins an advantage that she can sell to someone still in the game,
right,
namely Sarah in this case, for one fire token. Natalie is so fire token rich, by the way.
She's a billionaire.
Yeah. I really think the show is setting up for her to come back at the merge, or whenever the first time someone comes back, she's going to have an advantage in that challenge because that's what she'll spend her tokens on. Right. And she already has an advantage because she's ridiculously good at challenges.
Yeah. Certainly physical ones.
Yeah.
I think Tyson is the first person coming to Extinction who could give her a run for her money.
I agree with that. I wonder how good Tyson is at challenges these days. You know, has fatherhood softened him since the last time you played?
Yeah, because I was like super good at that kind of stuff before I had
Yeah,
kids.
You were like ripped, right? Long flowing hair. Like
I was like an Olympian.
Yeah. And you know, you hey, Harry, kids and Harry's like, seen, over.
Harry's seen me plank.
Yeah, I have.
Do you guys do a lot of planking contests in the writers?
We do some challenges. We had like a mini basketball game.
And Harry was very supportive. He would encourage me to not give up before I reached at least 1 minute.
Oh, yeah. Man. A 1 minute plank is hard for me to do.
It's hard.
It is hard.
On Australian Survivor, there was a couple of guys that did a 20-minute plank.
Well, no. I think the world record was just set by a Marine at like 6 hours. And I'm like, that's absurd.
Oh, my gosh. 6 hours?
Did someone like slide a water bottle underneath his mouth whenever he was thirsty? Like, how did he do that? That's insane.
I don't know, but he should be on Survivor. Just to work it back into the show.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. Yes. You know, that's one thing I really like about the Australian version. I always digress about the Australian version every episode.
Which I've never seen.
But the Australian version, they are not afraid to cast ludicrously talented athletic people. Like they have a whole two seasons. They had a theme called Champions versus Contenders. Mm-hmm. And the Champions tribe is like multi gold medal Olympians, you know, football champions. Like it's amazing. But on the American one, they cast athletes, but they're usually not in the best shape anymore.
They're usually not in their prime.
Yeah.
This reminds me a little bit of American Gladiators. Remember that show where they would like just had like the biggest people just beat the crap out of normal people.
I loved that show. That show was like, you know, the height of like, I was the perfect age and frankly the perfect gender for that show when it was at its peak. Like that was like appointment viewing every week, American Gladiators. I loved it.
Yeah, I would love to see some of those guys on Survivor. Like now.
Yeah.
Yeah. Razor and late. Yeah. They all had names like.
You may remember me from 20 years ago. I was
Nitro.
Razor. Yeah. I mean, speaking of 20 years, like, Harry, okay, I know you've never seen Survivor, but you're clearly aware of it. It's been on for 20 years now. What was your impression of what Survivor was? You talked a little bit about that versus, like, you know, what you saw. Was it.
Well,
and why didn't you ever check it out? Did you just assume it was terrible? And what do you think now?
Well, the first reason I didn't really check it out is just purely personal or financial, I guess, in that I write for scripted television. That is my occupation.
Right.
I don't want unscripted TV shows to do well. So I've been rooting against it for 40 years.
Yeah, that I think you may have lost that battle, unfortunately.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It seems to be doing all right. But I guess I thought it was just sort of more of the silly games.
And, yeah. Right. I know, based on
how you're doing and
yeah. Based on the way you described what you thought it was earlier on in this, in our podcast, I wouldn't want to watch it either. Mm-hmm. You know, like that doesn't appeal to me at all. Like people just doing challenges. Yeah. I mean,
yeah.
The politics is what makes this.
But it's investing in the people and their personalities and their strategies. And that's what keeps you coming back, I would think.
Absolutely.
It's way more of a sort of cerebral game than I think people realize.
Yeah. It's a big chess match.
Pretty much, yeah.
Where everybody stinks.
Where everybody sucks at the game.
Yeah. No, everybody smells really badly.
Yeah.
That scene where Tyson was like, where Sarah was like, let me smell your breath. And Tyson was like, no, you don't get to smell my breath.
Yeah.
I love that scene. That was funny.
That was gross. Yeah, I mean, that is what's interesting about the season is everybody, in terms of what I said, like everybody doesn't suck. You know, like there's all the people sort of know the game, and it's been interesting, like, to see how that's changed strategies in some ways, because the stuff that people could use on less talented or less aware players just doesn't work anymore.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's sort of like the magician has shown you how he does the trick, and now you're looking for it.
Yeah.
On the flip side, you've also got everybody being like 10 years older. So usually the cast is very young and more athletic, and now you've got...
Right.
You know, all things considered, this is still a pretty attractive cast. Considering they only had literally 39 people to pull from, or 38 people to pull from casting-wise, they did a great job. Like, this cast is really fun, and there's a lot of cool interactions that... you know, Scott and I have been like dying to see, like when Yule and Sophie became an alliance, that was like, oh my God, this is the greatest thing of all time. Like I never knew I wanted a Yule Sophie alliance so badly.
Well, it rewards the long-term investment that we've put in this show. I've been watching this show for 20 years and now you've got characters from season 3 coming in and interacting with characters from season, 17, and
that's why you guys are the best ones to do a podcast about the show.
There's plenty of people like us, but
there's plenty of other Survivor podcasts.
Are they watching Australian Survivor too? I don't think so.
Yeah,
what did you say?
They are. Believe me, they are still. Yeah, these other podcasters are definitely watching Australian Survivor. They might not be podcasting about it, but in any case,
they are on our half.
Yep, exactly.
Yeah, that's another. That's the sort of main Survivor podcast.
Oh,
right.
Yes, there's a lot of Survivor podcasts, Sari.
But yours is you're on
the number one for you.
As far as you know.
As far as you need to know, we are the number one.
Let's see. Is
what
there
else
anything
happened
else
in the episode? Yeah. And who else?
Let's talk about Adam's attempt to win back favor of his tribe.
He's really unlikable. At least
Adam.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's trying his darndest, isn't he, to make people like him again, but it's not working.
Yeah.
And it almost worked. And then Rob geniusly just immediately throws him under the bus. And can I just point out, Scott, I can't think of a better way to handle it, to make it believable than the way Rob did, by going up to Jeremy and Michelle and going, what do you want me to do about Adam? He keeps coming around to talk to me. It was like so believable. Right?
I was actually stunned by that because I've never seen Boston Rob come to people in that sort of deferential position. So
yes.
I wasn't sure if it should, how is it believable that he's asking them how to handle it. But what I thought he did really well was that he didn't say, oh, Adam's trying to get you out.
Right.
He just said, Adam's still talking to me.
It was implied because if he's coming to me, that means he's not coming to you.
Yes. Oh, it was so genius. So I was really impressed.
Everything could run through their imaginations of what is Adam telling them.
You know, There's one. It's one thing to lie. It's another thing to lie in a way that's so believable that you just it never gets in doubt, right? Like, yes, he was being deferential, but it's possible that he's been deferential for weeks because he's been on the bottom.
Right. That's true.
You know? And you know what? Not to turn it back to my occupation, Scott's occupation, but that's good TV. I mean, that's good storytelling. Is right. You make the audience come a little bit toward you. You don't say. You know, you don't have your character say, hey, Adam wants to get on my side so he can screw you guys over. You say, right. Look, Adam's right. coming to me. I don't know what it means.
Yeah. Exactly. And
you, the audience do a little bit of the work.
Yeah. Genius. I was really impressed. And poor Adam.
Yeah.
He really worked himself into a bad spot.
He was in such a good spot before that.
He had worked himself out of a bad spot in episode one into a very good spot
in episode two. I feel like everything we've seen of Adam this season is how he just is falling on his face.
Yeah, it's true. And, you know, Adam is a great example of the type of modern, overly strategic player. Mm-hmm. Normally a player of Adam's style does not get to the end.
Yeah, so sort of the Iago... Always has laying plots everywhere.
Exactly. It seems like plotting Sandra, and scheming.
Sandra with her super simple fuck everyone but me is sort of like,
yep.
You come for me.
Nothing personal.
You know, you better hope I don't find out about it.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, well, I mean, some of the stuff Adam was trying in the prior episode, like, hey, if I tell Boston Rob that his ally is going to go, and then he'll be grateful to me for cluing him in, and mm-hmm. he'll have nowhere else to go. That might work with somebody who's never played this game before. He literally chose the person who played the game more times than anybody else.
Yes.
To try that with.
Yeah. You know, there's a little clip where he says, normally on Survivor, it's not a good idea to... You know, tell your target you're voting him out, uh-huh. or is it? And it was like this big hammy, or is it, right? And I wish like that is one I would have a sound drop of. Like that was almost an evergreen sound drop where I used to do sound drops for the podcast. I'm not doing them this season because it's a little extra work. But there was a sound drop in this episode that I would desperately want, and I tweeted about it. And it's when Sandra said, "Oh, really?" What it was? It was so good.
No.
She was talking about how Tyson was coming to her and she was just listening. She was listening and then she said, oh yeah. She said, I was listening to Tyson and I was just like, oh really? Dang. It was such a good sound drop. And I could play it like after everything you say, Scott, and just be like, it would be so sarcastically funny, but you're just going to have to imagine it.
Ryan used to, always love to undermine me with his sound drops. Yep. My favorite sound, Sandra of all time. Well, one of the favorites is that still sticks in my mind is that same tone when she won the second time. She goes, Russell thinks he says he wants to keep me to the end because I'm not going to get a single vote at the end. But I don't know about that.
Yeah, classic. I had that. I had that as a sound drop too. That's for sure. Kind of yeah. She is just amazing. She's definitely one of me and Scott's favorite players of all time. She's just constantly entertaining mm-hmm. and so good at the game. Like, Scott, how is she not voted out yet? They had two chances to vote her out.
Yeah. I didn't think she'd last this long. Now, I'm nervous for when the swap comes, because when the swap comes...
I know, the swap is going to be bad for
then
her.
Then there's going to be bad for one of those big players. Sandra, she can't Parvati, sit out. Or Rob.
She's probably not going to be able to sit out in challenges during the swap.
She's going to have to hope they win. She could do the puzzle.
I guess, yeah.
Good luck all around.
I don't know if she's still there.
I think we've covered most everything in the episode. One thing I want to do, Scott, since we have someone who has never seen an episode until they saw two just recently, is I want to go back to that fun game we used to do where we make our guest guess which of the four main characters from what's the show?
The Facts of Life.
The Facts of Life. Oh. Which of the four main characters from The Facts of Life have played Survivor?
Oh, wow.
Do you want me to remind you of who they were?
Yes.
Tootie.
Right. Is that your guess or is it your guess?
No, I'm just trying to name them right
yeah,
now.
Yeah, okay, yes.
Blake was one?
Blair. Yes. The blonde.
Who was the New York jockey one?
That was the what?
The tomboy. What was the tomboy?
Oh,
what
Joe.
Was her name? Joe.
And the other one, Mindy?
And Natalie. Mindy Cohn played her, yes.
Okay. I'm going to say Joe.
A fair guess.
It was Blair.
Blair, really?
Blair played Lisa.
Would have been my fourth guess.
Yeah.
She did quite well, too.
Well, it wasn't the character of Blair that she would be my fourth choice.
Oh, she played the whole game in character.
As Blair. And she just complained about how she had to be. Her daddy was rich, and she shouldn't be subject to these conditions.
I can't believe we've never made that joke before, Scott.
Lisa Welch will play. I know.
We've talked about this in almost every episode of the podcast. We've never made the joke that she played in character.
Yeah.
That's
Lisa Welch, she came in second place.
Yeah. It's pretty good.
Yeah.
The first and only season where all three finalists were over 40.
Oh.
In the first and only season where one of the three finalists was a convicted pedophile.
Well, he was not at that time.
Oh, that's right. Good, fair point.
Yeah, they started screening after that.
Yeah, after that. Maybe we ought to check these people out.
Take a look at some of these people before we...
Well, and in fairness, we don't know that he's a pedophile. He's a convicted... What is it called when you have
in possession
child
of
pornography?
Child pornography, yes.
Yeah, whatever you are with that is what he... Yeah.
I mean, let's really make sure we delineate.
We want to give Michael Scoobin a fair shake here. We don't know if he ever did anything beyond something horrible.
You guys need to talk to a lawyer.
I think, yeah. Michael Scoobin's going to hear this and sue us.
Yeah.
I'm not a convicted pedophile. I'm a convicted child pornography aficionado.
That is the legal term for it, I believe.
I'm looking for child stars for a project I'm working on.
I was working on a paper about child pornography.
Yeah. All right. This topic is something I don't want to belabor. That's for sure.
There's like, by the way, I just want to say there's two or three people who have just on the cast who are still so invisible.
I know, right? Who got Denise got nothing this week.
Denise got nothing. Kim got nothing.
Kim got barely anything.
I don't know who Kim is. Denise is William DeVoe's sister.
Correct.
Yeah, right?
Yeah. Exactly.
I will say, Harry, out of all of our guests, you are much better at remembering names.
Oh,
it
good.
Might be because you saw two episodes. But yeah.
Denise in her season beat Blair and the pedophile.
Ah.
That was her. Her good competition in the final three.
So it was Willem Dafoe.
That seems like a really 70s NBC show. Denise Blair, the pedophile. Driving cross country with a monkey or something.
It was on after Chico and the Man.
Yeah.
And the twist is the monkey is the pedophile.
I'm listening.
We got something like that in the works.
Send me a series Bible and I'll consider it.
That's the elevator pitch.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Oh, boy.
I want to write a pilot called Elevator Pitch now.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. It's...
Yeah, but Kim, previously known as one of the greatest winners of all time, I don't think we've heard a word from her in the last...
Almost non-existent. My hope is that, much like Australian Survivor, this season they're choosing to only feature the people who are important to the story right now instead of force-feeding us people that make it to the end.
I don't know. I mean, we see a lot of Yule.
We are being force-fed Yule. We are being force-fed Yule, for sure, right?
And I love Yule.
I love Yule. I have a sneaking suspicion he gets like fourth or something. Because that he's so visible, right? But on the other hand, male strategic winners are often this visible this early.
So he's either the winner or the person who should have won.
Right. Mm. Exactly. Exactly. I think we can confidently say that at this point, right?
I mean, he's just been so consistently in the show, whether his actions on the episode have really meant, you know, been important that week. He's been a part of it.
So, who is this we were talking about? I got a little lost there.
Yule,
yeah.
Yeah, and you know, now that we've fully poisoned the well on this, I wanted to ask you before we move on to our segments, mm-hmm. now that you've seen two episodes, who do you think is going to win based on what you've seen?
Like I said, I was impressed with Yule. He seems to have his head on. If Natalie finds a way over, I would not count her out.
Yeah,
yes.
But I don't know how it works. I'm just going by the... She seems to have something like driving her that most people don't have.
It's amazing.
That's one other thing that's great about her. Yeah, she's always on a mission. And it's usually a mission of revenge.
Yeah. Yeah. Because the way she reacted to finishing that walk was like she had let go of something that was really painful.
Awesome.
Yeah.
You know, they did take a moment. I mean, they didn't have to take a moment for Ethan to tell us how great Natalie was at the challenge, mm-hmm. you know, like they didn't have to include that. So it's important that she's good at challenges.
Yes. Obviously. I love that right as Natalie and Amber had come back, finished the challenge and basically broken down, then Danny, who is the other woman on Extinction, mm-hmm. there, just kind of comes in all chipper. Well, I'm done. Undermine the narrative there a bit.
But she was the slow and steady one, wasn't she? She was the one who just said...
Yeah.
And the other person I want to mention who we barely seen this season is Wendell.
Yeah, and Wendell is part of this alliance. Yeah, he's the black guy in the tribe who was working with Yule and Sophie.
Fireman. The fireman.
No.
No, that's Jeremy
that's
on
the other black Jeremy. Guy.
Yeah, the okay. other black guy. Yeah.
So Wendell didn't.
I've only seen him in cutaways. I never heard him speak or anything. Yeah.
No,
we get reaction shots. Yeah. That's it. Yeah.
Yeah, but I think we'll be seeing a bit more of him next week based on the trailer for next week.
Oh, yes, that's right. Tell us about this, Scott.
Well, Michelle, who has definitely, she started out invisible, she's come on strong the last couple episodes. She talks in the preview about getting swapped onto a tribe with her ex-boyfriend. Mm. And I believe that's Wendell. That after they were both on the show, they met and started dating for a while.
Yeah, interesting.
So that's interesting, I guess.
I guess, yeah. I mean, it depends on how it plays out, right? Like, how important is it? Did they split on bad terms? We'll find out, I guess.
Well, I'm guessing, actually, if they talked about it in the preview, that it's not going to end up screwing them.
You never know. Why wouldn't? Why would them talking about it in the preview?
A lot of misdirection in the preview.
That's true. They do like to misdirect in the preview. That's true. All right. Well, why don't we move on to our segments?
All right.
Let's do it.
I will say this episode, fairly simple. I guess that's what happens when a quarter of it is given to just people walking up and down a hill. But,
as Tony would say, simply watch an episode, simply see what happens, simply make your decisions.
Yes, exactly. Okay, we're about to make some decisions.
All right.
In our segments. Okay, first segment, let's do Hold Up Bro.
Hold up, bro.
Hold up, bro. This is the segment where we say, what in the episode made you go, hold up, bro, and you had to rewind your DVR to check it out and see it again.
Well, go ahead, Harry.
No, go ahead.
I was going to say, if it was so simple, I want to hear.
Well, for me, because I wrote it down because I prepare for this.
Unlike me,
Scott,
I refuse to ever prepare for this podcast.
The thing I wanted to see again was that amazing B-roll of the Hornet's Nest.
Oh my god!
Yeah, that was terrifying.
That was horrifying. I've never seen anything as scary on this show. It was
now,
terrible.
Do you recall like what? I got to rewatch the episode. Like, where in the episode did that come up? Because often shots of wildlife are symbolic.
So I think it was right after the challenge when they got back. And it was like time to decide who to vote someone out. I'm pretty sure it was then because, you know, stirring the hornet's nest
right.
is an apropos analogy there. Because they lost, now the hornet's nest is up in arms. But I'm not sure. So you'd think I would know since I held up bro and rewound. But
yeah,
man, it was freaky. Freaky cool, though.
Now that I've heard that, I like that one. But the one I was thinking of was during the swim challenge when they took, they, you know, the ones who were swimming took off like a sash that was not a sash, but they had something on that was letting them pull the boat. And one of the women took hers off. It looked like she was taking her shirt off. And I kind of like, whoa.
Yeah, it was almost like a harness.
Yep. Yeah. Like a harness to pull a boat with. What? It's so weird seeing people pull a boat like that. Right? Yeah. Like,
I know. They were like beasts of burden.
Yeah.
They didn't seem to mind it, though.
Nah.
Although, yeah. Again, it would have been smarter to put somebody who could jump, maybe.
Yeah,
in the boat, so. Who could get out and then go get your keys rather than people with a 4-inch vertical leap.
Yeah. Scott, do you got to hold up, bro?
I'm going to have to manufacture. I never actually backed up.
Sure, that's fine.
You know, I'm just full disclosure here.
Just in, you know, it's but, the spirit of the...
Yes, but something that sort of made me sit up and take notice... you know, we haven't talked much about Ethan's meltdown on Extinction Island.
Yeah, that's true.
But I kind of did want to go back and like, I was like, where, how long, like what happened? He blacked out and then we came to and the doctor was there.
I mean, that's the editing, right? I don't think he actually blacked out.
I mean, yeah, that's what I want to know, what happened and like how long did it take her to get there? Because I assume she's not stationed on Extinction Island. And it made me wonder, well, what happens if there is like a more serious emergency on Extinction? Like how quickly can they get there?
It seemed like if maybe they saw him struggling and brought her.
Yeah, I could see that. I could also see them going, you know, this challenge is going to be brutally difficult. Yeah. Let's make sure we have at least one medical person on hand with electrolytes and all that stuff.
Yeah. Right.
But the editing of that was, you know, he was sort of like sitting by himself on the trail, but he seemed very alone and isolated. But then they went into low angle cuts. So clearly there was a camera within like 2 feet of him. Looking up at his sweaty, deteriorating face.
It's so easy to forget when you watch somebody on the show be totally lonely and isolated.
Yeah.
That there is also somebody 2 feet away with Cameron. There's probably a boom guy there as well.
Yeah.
Yep. Absolutely. How do they get, you know, it's a miracle that they get these shots where they seem alone, right? Like,
Well, and they must have mic packs on him because there was a point where he was like whispering to himself or something.
Pick it up or something.
Pick it up. Nope, you're absolutely right. Mic pack for sure. Interesting. Yeah. Now I want to hold up, bro, and go look for that mic pack.
Yeah.
All right. Let's move on to our next segment. This segment is Getting Loud.
Uh-huh.
So who got loud?
Another great Sandra quote.
Is this... Getting Loud, is that like a literal?
I'm gonna explain it, and it'll go over the music here when I play the theme song, which is right now. We only like it if it's loud. We only like it if it's loud. I can get loud too. What the? All right, this is Getting Loud. Who got loud this week? Who stood out in a good way? And who impressed you the most?
I go first.
If you'd like to, if you have someone on hand.
I haven't said my name in a while. Me, Harry Hannigan, I'll go first.
Yeah, okay. You go for it. You go first.
I was impressed with Yule. I thought he sort of cheerfully managed a very successful getting rid of Tyson.
Yeah, Yule was really impressive for sure. He seems to be the person who's in charge over there.
What was all his talk about, we got to keep the facade up? That we're all really together.
Right.
Well, it seems like they were flying under the radar that no one really knew that there was that alliance of four people.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
And they kept it quiet, and he's like, so now it's going to come out because we're going to beat the crap out of Tyson.
Yeah, right. I mean, he's just saying we don't want to draw battle lines yet because as soon as we do that, it makes it harder to win challenges. Yes. We don't have tribe unity. You know, you see it time and time again when a tribe starts turning on themselves and they're not united in who they vote out. It often leads to more and more challenge losses.
Right.
Now, what Yule doesn't know is that there's a swap, which it even is benefits them even more to stay unified because when you swap with numbers, say 3-2 against the other tribe, then it'll be easy to vote those other people out.
Man, Yule, I mean, had like 14 years ago he played. And he swooped back in and just took over.
I apparently got no body fat on him during that time.
No, he looks exactly like he did.
It's insane.
There's no change in his appearance, his intellect, his personality. He just came back in with a clear strategy and very cheerfully just said, well, I think this is probably the most logical way to play the game. So let's do this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. What's the phrase? Asians don't agin. That was, I reached for that.
Oh,
one. Sorry.
Yeah, that was.
Anyways.
Is that a phrase?
No, it is now. you know who I think got loud?
Who's that?
I really liked Michelle this episode. I really liked that scene where she's talking to Rob and saying, you know, explaining that she was a controversial winner. Mm-hmm. And I really liked the way that she handled, Adam. Michelle is standing out more and more to me as a possible winner pick from the other tribe. Mm-hmm. I think her game is just really strong. Her social game is insane.
That was a very nice scene with her in Boston.
I loved that scene. And I love that little circle and a string thing. I always mention it, but I really think that circle and a string is really important to Rob's character.
Did he set that up or is that like something producers put in there?
I think he probably set it up. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, I agree with both of your picks and I could make those same choices, but I'm going to go with the queen. Sandra.
Mm. All right.
I just feel like she was, although Yule, I think, was the engineer of the Tyson vote off, I also think it was Sandra as well. Just
she was the swing vote.
She was not willing to consider a different plan. And that different plan would have gone, you know, it wasn't like Yule knew about this possible different plan and said, no, to talked her out of it.
Right.
I think it was Sandra saying, no, I'm not going to give Tyson an inch. Goodbye.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that leads into our next segment, which is Ill Regrets.
What's the time?
It's time to get ill.
What's the time?
It's time to get
ill regrets.
Who do you think this episode will have ill regrets about a choice they made, something they did, and you cannot choose Tyson?
that would make it very, very simple.
Exactly. Yeah. So I'll lead because it's related to what Scott just said. I think Sandra is going to have ill regrets.
Uh-oh.
I wasn't impressed with Sandra's decision. I think that Tony's pitch to her was absolutely 100% correct. Sandra is going to get burned by those four unconnected people. And I think it's only a matter of time.
But don't you think she would get burned by Tyson too?
Well, I mean, he did already try to burn her. Yeah, I mean, look, Sandra is probably a dead man walking no matter what.
Yeah, I mean, she
just because she's won twice.
Good options.
Yeah. Especially because this swap is probably going to screw her bad. But I don't know. Like, I think, you know, if the tribes were to stay the same, I think she'd be in a real bad spot in the next episode. But that's just my take. So.
I am worried about her with the swap. I mean, that's the only time she's ever not won was because she got swapped onto a tribe that had greater numbers and they just said, oh,
yeah,
she's the biggest threat. Get her out.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. Like she's a fifth wheel in either alliance, right? Like she can go with Yule and that those four and be the fifth wheel in that alliance, or she can be the fifth wheel in the Tony, Sarah, Tyson, Kim alliance. Because Tyson and Kim are tight and Tony and Sarah are tight.
The times she won, she never had like an alliance that dominated the
yeah. No, you're right. She doesn't care about alliances.
A singleton who just
one of the rare people who won without an without really having an alliance.
Yeah.
Amazing.
You know that, Harry.
I know you're talking about.
You know how all these people won.
I was just happy for a singleton reference from the British lady book.
That was for you.
Thanks. I liked watching The Ill Regrets of Adam from last week.
Yeah, that was fun.
Can I count that? Because that was
yes,
like, really
I mean, we all agreed Adam was going to have ill regrets on our last episode. So
yeah, pretty clear cut last
time. He did have ill regrets, that's for sure.
And we got to see them. Soup? You guys want soup? It's really good soup.
Oh my god, that was so funny.
Real tasty soup. Made it myself. No?
Do you guys want food? I know you're starving. Do you want some food? No, Adam, we don't. We don't want your food.
We want a dish called Go Away, Adam. How about that? Can you serve that up for us?
They can serve that themselves.
He was so cocky in the previous episode. It was fun to see him get his comeuppance.
Yeah.
Do you think he can work his way back?
I think people will discount him for a while, like, because he's so pathetic.
I think
they'll see him as a threat.
Right.
Yeah.
I think if he swaps and can work with someone from the Ewell, Sophie, Nick, Wendell alliance, I think he's got a shot, but it's going to be tough.
Mm-hmm.
And it depends on how much he's willing to sell out his old tribe, you know. But Scott, do you have any ill regrets?
Oh, I didn't do one?
I don't think so.
All right.
Nice try, though.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes I'm more prepared. Full disclosure, I had a long day yesterday. And I watched it very late and was struggling to stay awake, which is very rare with Survivor.
Well, you know, it's hard when it's hard to stay awake when it's 15 minutes of people walking up and down a hill. But
I had been to Disneyland yesterday. I did about 28,000 steps, and watching them walk up the hill over and over.
You were flashing back to Disneyland.
My feet were just, living vicariously. I'm going to cop out, and because I don't see any, I'm not sure I agree about Sandra. I think an argument could be made either way for which way she needed to go. So I'm going to say that it's Wendell for being so invisible. For not doing anything interesting enough to make it into the show.
He swam. He pulled a boat.
I like him.
Yeah.
I want to know this, Harry.
Yes.
So you've seen two episodes of Survivor. What do you think of the show? And are you now, like, would you ever watch it again? Are you now curious to see what happens, or are you just happy to go on with your life?
If I was on a plane and there was two channels and one of them was showing Survivor, I would watch Survivor probably.
All right.
Depends on what's on the other channel, though.
Yeah, it does. But I'm not going to seek it out. I'm not going to become a fan in season 40.
Right.
There's enough... people telling me, "Oh, you gotta watch this show." That I'm watching most of those shows.
It's insane,
and I'm only watching like 70% of those shows that people are screaming at me.
That's a high percentage. I'm watching such a low percentage.
It's hard. It's hard to watch all this TV.
Yeah, it is.
You know, I'd like to request that people stop recommending shows.
Well, I started watching Hunters, and I can't turn it off, and it's not because it's so good.
What is Hunters?
It's Al Pacino Jewish man tracking down Nazis in 1977 New York.
And it's not. It's so
they,
bad.
They all seem very surprised that Wernher von Braun was a Nazi. They all like, what? Wernher von Braun was a Nazi?
Well, so this leads into our fourth segment, which is what are you watching on TV lately, and why do you recommend
it so hard? I didn't know
what the
fourth segment was, and there I was.
No, I'm just kidding. I'm kidding.
Okay.
I'm watching Denise. What was the name of the show? Denise Blair and the Pedophile, I believe it was called.
You gotta watch that.
Willem Dafoe in.
That's his sister.
He's like in like an Adam Sandler-esque thing. He's playing his own sister.
Willem Dafoe and Willem Dafoe and Willem Dafoe.
Full Eddie Murphy.
Yep. He's playing all three.
Yeah.
Yep. I love
it. He can do it.
He can do. I mean, the man is versatile.
The man has range.
His mouth certainly has range.
Yeah.
Harry, thank you so much for taking time.
It was really fun to do.
Life to do this silly, crazy show and watch two episodes of Survivor for us. I so appreciate that.
I was like, we can't ask him to watch another one, but I really appreciate you doing it.
Well, I committed.
Really fun.
You know, once you commit, you gotta go 100%.
Is there anything you have coming up or any social media you want to direct people to who say, I gotta get more of this guy?
You know, I did a web series with Brent Spiner about 10 years ago called Fresh Hell, which is on YouTube.
Yeah.
Fresh Hell.
I recommend it.
Thank you. And I'm in an improv group called The Transformers. We play at the Fanatic Salon every month. I think we're up April 28th or something.
And that's here in Los Angeles.
That's here in the west side of Los Angeles.
Oh, Fanatic West Salon. Side improv show. I might be able to go to that.
I should have mentioned at the top, The Transformers. Yes, it's... For those of us in the improv community here in Los Angeles, Transformers are a fairly legendary group.
We've been around since 94. I joined in 94. They had already been doing it for a couple of years when I joined. So,
yeah, Survivor wasn't even on yet.
Wow.
Yeah, you predate Survivor.
That says a lot.
In America. If it's 40 years old.
Where can we find you on Twitter?
I'm on Twitter at HB Hannigan.
All right.
HB Hannigan. HB is in Boy Hannigan.
No, it's 20 years old in America. They do two seasons a year.
I see. Oh, I get it.
Yes.
Okay. Yes.
Now you know. The more you know.
I thought you could only do one season a year, but I guess you can. That's...
You can do as many as you want, turns out.
The British call three or four if they want.
The BBC calls six episodes a season or a series. Yeah,
exactly.
They call it a series, yeah.
They call it a series, yeah.
Well, yes, please check out Harry on Twitter and go see him live. Ryan, can we still find you at the same Twitter address?
I did not change it. It's still at Ryan Elder Music.
Yes.
I did not get canceled. Good.
I still prefer my tweets to be routed through at Ryan Elder Music.
Yes, but you know, if you need to contact Scott directly, where can we?
You can follow me at Scott Chernoff. There's so much wonderful content there.
Oh,
you never get bored.
Full of the tent, Scott.
You never get bored when you go to my Twitter page.
Yeah.
There's something from a couple days ago, something from a couple weeks before that.
Yeah. Great.
Thank you so much for this wonderful experience.
Yes.
And thank you.
See you next.
We will be back. We should say for anybody who might still be listening. Our next one will be late, right, Ryan?
Yep, it's probably not going to be up until Monday next time. So sorry to that one guy who gave us a one-star review because we didn't release our episode until Monday. That's going to happen again. Mm-hmm. If that guy's still listening.
I'll take another star. We get paid by the star.
Yep. Maybe you could take him out to brunch or something and listen together.
I'll take him. I'll meet him for brunch on Thursday morning. I'll give him all my thoughts.
There you go. Yep.
On the most recent episode.
There you go.
All right, Scott. I'll talk to you next Monday. Harry, thanks again.
You're very welcome.
Thanks, Harry. Bye,
guys.
Bye.
The tribe has spoken. Now I'm going to put out your little lamp with my lamp stopper.